Dave's Psych Lectures, part of the Thunderbird 6 podcasting network.
So today, we're going to talk about the reason you guys all decided to take psychology. The reason most people go into psychology is to study disorders and learn about therapy and stuff like that. And we'll do disorders first, then we'll talk about therapy, and we're going to end the year with social psychology. So this is the stuff that, like I said, this is why I went into psychology, was to study this. I got out of it, that sort of idea, pretty quickly because of the idea, I figured I had enough of these myself. So, that's weird. Oh, different. Why study disorders? Here's a question. Well, disorders are pretty pervasive, is the first thing. And pervasive just means they're all over the place. Between 400 million and half a billion people worldwide right now have some disorder. So that's the first thing. There's a lot of people that have these problems. There's some of these things that are completely culture-free. For example, schizophrenia and depression are something that shows up in every culture, every country. And the rates are roughly the same. So they have not, doesn't seem too much to do with culture so much as part of being human. Whereas a lot of other disorders, something like, say, eating disorders, change depending upon where you live. There's not a lot of people, for example, with eating disorders in the Caribbean. Why, we don't know. It's probably something to do with culture, sort of the attitude towards body shape, stuff like that. It might have something to do with that. Who knows? And then there are disorders that are other places that we don't have here. In Japan, there's a disorder that involves being exceedingly embarrassed about shaking hands with people and, you know, bowing, which is another sort of salutation they do in any social situation. And like extreme blushing, that kind of, which we just don't get here. They're both probably rooted in anxiety, though, right? So the anxiety itself is probably culture-free, but the way it's expressed is different. So it depends on where you live, but everywhere people get schizophrenia, and everywhere people get depressed. It'll also help us understand normal people. A lot of people that have disorders, many disorders are really just too much or too little of something. Depression is too little of everything, in essence. It's completely flat emotion, flat or affect, as we say. It's no motivation, that kind of thing. So that's too little of something. Think about something like schizophrenia, which is hearing voices and paranoia. We all have little thoughts now and then, but we let them go and they don't take over our lives. Or think about something like obsessive compulsive disorder, where, for example, maybe you wash your hands obsessively to the point where you do it 700 or 800 times a day because you're obsessed with the idea of germs. And you end up, in fact, washing your hands to a level where they get raw and you bleed. Then you definitely will, yeah. So thing with that is most of us can see times, for example, when even a little bit, like, for example, I have a thing where I check to see if I've turned the coffee maker off when I leave the house 8-9 times because I'm an idiot. I obsessively check to see if my door's locked at home. I wouldn't say obsessively. 3-4 times before I leave, just double check. Then I go back and go, I'm not sure. Better just make sure it's pulled, closed, and locked. I do that. But it's not disordered because it doesn't interfere with my life. If I did that and I got to work late and it took me, an extra 40 minutes each day just to do that, that's a disorder. So we can understand normal functioning by looking at the abnormal. And I'm using normal and abnormal here completely in the statistical sense. I'm not judging anybody. My son has autism. When I look at his behavior, and now that he speaks quite a bit, getting an insight into the way he thinks, it's not that different, except for a level of intensity, from how a lot of scientists think. In fact, scientists are about 6 times more likely to have autistic children than non-scientists. And I look at his behavior, and he loves putting things, classifying things, and knowing about labels of things, that kind of thing. Lately, it's cars. He can tell you, we drive by a car, and he says, look, a 2006 Ford Focus. He somehow has the impression that I'm going to buy him a Chevy Impala 2001. I don't know why or what he thinks he could do with it, because he ain't driving it. I'm trying to explain to him, Daddy doesn't make enough money to just buy you cars. He looks at me and goes, yes. No, it doesn't work that way. I'm sorry. I think maybe he heard about our new union agreement. I don't know. But I have a bit of that myself. Not nearly at the level that he does. Right? But when I was 8 years old, I memorized the flags, capital cities, unit of money, and highest mountain in every country in the world. I don't know why. It just seemed like a thing to do. Which became this strange thing wherever somebody would come over to the house and Dad would say, hey, watch this, my kid's really smart. Hey, Dave, what's the flag love? You know, whatever it looked like. It's two red bars and I just explain it. Why do I have to do this, Dad? So maybe we can understand normal functioning by looking at abnormal functioning. And finally, as it says there, there's people that are sick. Help them. I mean, we don't ever wonder, why would you study diabetes? You know, why would you study cancer? We want to know about things so we can help people. But that's, again, not the only reason. I mean, it's a big part of being a person, because a lot of people have disorders, and it'll really help us understand ourselves, normal people. So we put all that together, plus that they're sick. I think it's something that really it demands study. What's a disorder? Well, this is a question that perhaps could lead to some controversy, but we can think of it this way. Disorders involve thinking or behavior that is atypical. Okay, atypical. Now you got to think about that. You might think to yourself, atypical? Well, a lot of people think atypically, and they're very successful. And we don't think they're disordered. I know. You know, you think about big corporate CEOs, sure, of you know, big innovative companies, right? Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, people like this. They don't think like the rest of us. That's true. And they've been pretty successful. So it's not just that. I wouldn't call the way they think or behave disturbing. Except for the rumor that Steve Jobs randomly fires people. But a lot of people do things like that. But if someone has a great idea, which would be atypical, we don't find it disturbing. When, you know, 6 years ago, Mark Zuckerberg thinks, I think I'll invent Facebook. People go, that's kind of weird and crazy, but no one went, ooh, and creepy. Right? So again, atypical is one thing, but it's also got to be disturbing. So disturbing could be something like, well, think about somebody who's got schizophrenia. Right? Somebody walking down the street screaming at themselves. That's disturbing. Right? You don't want to be on, you go to the other side of the street. You don't want to watch that because it's a little creepy. It doesn't mean they're a bad person, etc. But it's a little disturbing, isn't it? It's a little disturbing. My son, again, who's high-functioning autistic, his behavior can be disturbing sometimes. It's disturbing to me, and I'm his father. So nothing bad about him. He's a good kid. But if he decides he doesn't like something, you better deal with that pretty quickly. Because if you've ever seen an autistic person have a meltdown, as we call them, it's really something to see. You know, there's the covering the ears, the screaming. If you've seen Rain Man, when he's like, I'm not getting on the airplane, you know, because he's worried about plane crashes, which is weird because that is also another one of my son's obsessions. It's fun looking at him and saying things, just random flight numbers, and he tells you when that flight crashed and who the pilot was. That's a little weird. And when you see it in public, it can be really weird. And it's disturbing to people. You don't like seeing it. It's not just odd. It's like, oh, God, that's I don't like that. That's wrong. Now, again, that's going to depend a lot probably on your culture. Right? It's maladaptive. In other words, it's not good. Think about depression. Is it adaptive? Is it good for you to not go to work and stay in bed all day, not have a shower, and just lie there thinking that everybody hates you? No. You'll lose your job. You won't make any money. That's maladaptive. Another one of the key things here is it unjustifiable? If I scream at the top of my lungs because someone's coming after me with a gun, that's exceedingly justified. No one would think that was weird behavior. Right? If someone brandished a firearm in here, and please don't. Pity me, I can't see well. Some of these you should laugh at. Some of them are jokes. But still, so if someone stood up with a gun and started screaming about how they're going to kill us all, we freak. Justifiable. Totally justifiable. If someone right now stands up and screams and freaks out, that's not justifiable. Right? Until you find out there's a scorpion in their boot or something. Because, of course, Sault Ste. Marie, known for its scorpions. So, if it's unjustifiable, that is another indication that we have something that's disordered. Right? Somebody screaming to themselves, walking downtown, that's not justified. Talking to yourself may look a little odd, but if you've ever seen me walking around, I talk to myself all the time. It's the only way I can be assured of intelligent conversation. It's a Woody Allen line. It's not my line. But if I'm walking, you'll often see me walk around the halls, or if you see me in the mall or whatever, I'm often doing things like, okay, so I got to do this, and then I got to get that report written, and then I've got to write that paper, then I got to mark those tests for those ungrateful my students, and then, okay, and then I'll go home. What am I going to make for dinner? I do that. It's a little odd, but I think out loud. It's what I do. And there's a lot of, I know other people like that. It's not unjustifiable because I'm actually solving real world problems. I'm not screaming about the communists looking into my thoughts. Will you stop listening to my thoughts? You know, you see these guys. Well, that's not justifiable because the communists aren't listening to your thoughts. They're listening to yours. So, right? Again, you put all that together, that is disordered. So that's clearly going to vary culturally, isn't it? Some things are atypical culture to culture. Doesn't matter. Not doing anything at all, depression, right? Completely flat, no emotion really, lying there, no motivation, not taking joy in anything. That's going to be pretty much culture independent. But other things are going to vary culturally. What's disturbing will vary culturally. And culturally could even be, you could also think of it even just sort of subculturally almost, right? Like within a group of people. So you could think of people with a religious belief that they're, and they're speaking to the God they pray to. Right? Now, depending on the group you're in, that might be a little weird, but if that's your religion, it's totally cool. And it's not atypical. Right? So that would really depend on that. Same thing with maladaptive. What is maladaptive? One place isn't somewhere else. Sort of emotion and motivation and these kind of things, and we talked about personal distance, you know, and communication, that kind of thing. In our society, me standing this far from Mike and talking to him is totally reasonable. Getting any closer, it gets maladaptive and weird. And it's like there's something wrong with me. And the same thing with unjustifiable. It's also going to vary temporally, right? Meaning over time. So things will change. If Joan of Arc was around today, we would think she was insane. Right? 14-year-old girl comes up to you and says, I'm going to win your war on terror. God told me how. And he's talking to me right now.
Was that God?
Might have been. That's God's ringtone. Most people don't know that. It's. I just got an iPhone, so I'm just excited about ringtones. I'm not even going to get mad at your phone.
I remember hearing somewhere that they're... I don't know if...
What's this have to do with my iPhone? No, I'm kidding. Go ahead, Billy.
I remember reading somewhere that Joan of Arc was probably schizophrenic.
I don't think she was schizophrenic because she could still function pretty well. I mean, she still did lead an army at 14. Not a lot of 14-year-old... She was hearing voices. It might have been... Now, if you, please, I'm not trying to offend anybody's religion, okay? But if she was around today, it could have been some kind of brain damage, some kind of probably temporal lobe, right? Temporal lobe. That's some stuff I've heard. But we don't have her body to look at.
That's why I wasn't sure.
Yeah, and I mean, but think about it. At that time, was it atypical? People actually, today, going around saying you are the second coming or the first coming, depending on your religion, of God, you'd go, okay. 2,000 years ago, that was not uncommon. People said those things, right? Or even think about 500 years ago, Joan of Arc. Was it disturbing? Apparently, Joan of Arc didn't disturb anybody because she led an army and drove the English out of France. Okay. Was it maladaptive? Drove the English out of France. Seems like it worked. Was it unjustifiable? The English were occupying France. So you put it all together, and at the time, Joan of Arc today would seem, like I said, we would think she had a disorder. At the time, it didn't seem like it. Right? And maybe she did, maybe she didn't. I'm not trying to talk about anybody's religion, but Joan of Arc is a pretty easy one to think of. So it's going to vary over time.
I was going to say Oracle. I said Oracle of Delphi.
Well, if there even was an Oracle of Delphi. We know there was a Jeanne d'Arc. I mean, that's actually an historical fact. Whereas there may not have ever been an Oracle. Probably the key thing here is harm. Are you doing harm to yourself or others? Right? If you put all that together, when you say something is a disorder, it's probably mostly about, you can probably boil this all down simply to, is it harmful to the person and harmful to others? Right? If it is, then yeah, it's probably disordered. So it's going to depend on your culture and depend on when. But there are some things that any culture finds disturbing and harmful. Okay, questions so far? You good? All right. Where do disorders come from? Well, they come from evil. No, I'm kidding. Evil spirits. That's clearly where disorders come from. Actually, the reason I bring this up is the old way up until really recently that we used to deal with disorder, psychological disorder. Well, you got to get the spirits out, the evil spirits, because it's the demons and the spirits and the what have you, clearly. Perhaps a troll. So what you could do is give people a bloodletting. Nothing that couldn't be taken care of with a good bleeding. Leeches
actually have a medicinal use.
They have a medicinal use that people figured out now. Yeah, so do maggots, yeah. Yeah, soldiers figured that out a long time ago. Leeches, they actually, if you have a blood clot on your eye, they'll put a leech on your eye now. Just suck the blood right out. Yeah, I mean, you don't want to look at that probably. You can't help it because it's on your eye. But, you know, you put it there for a few minutes, sucks the blood out, pretty awesome.
And then you pull it off and it pulls half of your eye with it?
No, I think they know what they're doing. So you remove the blood, the hair, the teeth. That's the more recent. The older technology was just drilling a hole in the skull.
Trepanning.
Yeah. So trepanning or trepanning, depending on how you pronounce that, there's both words are the same. You can look at skulls of, going back even, you know, fossilized skulls, where you can see the hole, and you can see that it was done either with a stake or, in fact, with something like a drill, right? And how do we know that? Well, we can see, actually, there's been healing. So the people, they were actually, it's amazing how, it's the word I'm looking for, how effective this probably was, because people They were very careful. It wasn't like they were trying to kill the guy. They were just trying to put a hole in his head to bring the evil spirits out. Like, what are you going to do? Spirits are caught in his head. Well, we'll probably drill a hole. It just sort of follows. And we know that people lived because you can see that there's been healing. You can also see it's very precise. It's not like a battle wound or something like that, right? So very precise. And in fact, it probably did work now and then. The reason it would have worked is things like encephalitis. So someone's brain is swelling, right? Or they have a tumor, and it would relieve some of the pressure. So probably for short periods of time, sometimes, drilling a hole in someone's head worked. I'm not saying it's a good approach today, but it's interesting that we know that this was done not just a battle wound or something like that. That's pretty obvious. These are straight on, either with a stake or literally with something like a drill. So for the longest time, though, that's what people thought. Well, it's demonic possession. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Tubular bells, The Exorcist, anyone? No? Okay. I'm so much older than you guys. Now, eventually a guy named Pinel in France came up with the excellent realization that it wasn't demons. Basically, you know what they used to do with people that were in mental institutions? Well, they weren't really institutions. They were basically prisons. They put them in cages. And you could go on tour of them. It was like a day at the zoo. It was like a day at the zoo. You know the word bedlam? You know, bedlam was like something's really bad, crazy, disorganized, berserk. You know, it's bedlam. Bedlam means it's a short form of the Bethlehem Hospital for the Insane in London, England. And people used to go and take tours like it was the zoo. And people were in cages and they were shackled. This is in the 1800s.
This is Pinel's doing?
No, this wasn't his doing. He realized that it wasn't demons. He said, look at how you're treating these poor people. You got them sleeping in straw, naked, shackled to a cage, and children come and throw things at them. How would you do? So he thought, look, people are under a great deal of stress, and we'd say today, I don't think he actually said that. And he said the treatment's inhumane. So maybe if we treated people a little bit better, some of these people could actually go function. And in fact, that's what happened in certain institutions in France. He actually had some influence, and he said, look, stop it. And also, same sort of thing was happening in Scotland. A different guy. Can't remember who the hell that was. The other thing that happened in the sort of 16, 17, 1800s is people realized that syphilis could make you crazy. And syphilis, of course, sexually transmitted disease. And it turned out that one of the symptoms later on was stuff that looked a lot like schizophrenia. People get paranoid, etc. So they say, oh, wow, a physical disorder, something we can actually see. Right? Something we know that what syphilis is, it can actually make you, well, yeah, go over the edge. So if that's the case, maybe some of these other things that we see have something that's like an organic cause as well. Right? So if that's the case, maybe we should start looking at all these things like they actually are real diseases rather than just demonic possession, stuff like that. This is actually still a pretty popular idea, of course. We look at things like brain issues where people have... you can think about obvious ones like, say, Parkinson's disease, which is a problem with... which is not a psychiatric disorder, but it's something about your brain, right? That you don't have enough dopamine and what happens, your substantia nigra, so you actually, your movement gets jerky and eventually it can stop. We know that, for example, when people get, we talked last term about, you know, getting a bump in the head in the wrong part of your head, you can end up being blind. Or you could just be blind for motion, or just for color, or just for color in motion, all kinds of crazy things, right? So we know that. It's not a huge step then, because we know that, say, for example, and we know what schizophrenia is. We know what causes schizophrenia. It's too much dopamine. It's specifically probably too many D2 receptors. It's kind of receptor. We can see that. That's easy. And, of course, there's a lot of work being done now on things like attention deficit disorder, dyslexia, autism, etc., trying to find what potential brain anomalies might be. Right? So if we can see the physical thing in the brain and we can see the disorder, it starts to make you think that, you know, this is a pretty sensible approach. Like I said, and schizophrenia and depression are treated with drugs nowadays. I will say that the depression treatment isn't nearly as effective as schizophrenia treatment for drugs, but it does help control it. Schizophrenia, though, there is really only one kind of therapy, and that's we give you an antipsychotic drug. And actually, the voices go away when you take the drug, and the paranoia goes away when you take the drug. Right? But depression, it's a little bit more complicated, and it's still, it isn't the case that we can completely control it with drugs. And those of you that know people that are depressed, or maybe perhaps you've been, you know, you take the drugs and you get the talking therapy, the cognitive behavioral therapy, and it takes between 2 and 6 weeks for the drugs to actually start working, which says that it's not just that. Finally, whereas with schizophrenia, you're hearing voices, I give you the drug, voices go away. Like half an hour, voices are gone, paranoia is gone. All right, so that's not bad. So clearly, it's the medical perspective, and at some level, it's all got to be organic because it's all in your brain, right? We're not there yet where we can just treat this like we would treat any organic disorder. But at some level, everything must be. The day will come where, and I would say within 50 years, where everything will be treated with a pill. I think talking therapy, which we will talk about, it will disappear. And it will be seen as not dissimilar to worrying about the trolls living in your body. Though it actually still does work, unlike the troll thing. But I think what's going to happen eventually is there will be a drug for everything. Because it's all got to be organic at some level. Must be. What else could it be, right? But we're not there yet. If you, on my blog, if you took a look at, I was on a podcast called Forecast, where a bunch of people predict the future, and that was my midterm prediction. I said that everything, you'll have a pill for everything, and they'll be designed for you. But that's not, you know, it'll be in your lifetime, I'll likely be dead by then.
You're actually already looking at making medications, like looking at people's DNA.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. I think there'll be stuff where we'll look at your genome, we'll look at various brain scans, and eventually be able to say, here is something that will stop whatever the problem is just for you. It won't work for you, but this will work for you. That will come. I mean, that's already being done for some things that aren't psychological disorders. So I wouldn't be surprised that, you know, it's going to happen. But it's going to be a long time from now. And we'll still have these disorders will still be around. But the treatment is going to stop, I think, this is the prediction I have anyway, is that it's going to stop being talking based. It's going to be a lot more based on, here, take two of these. Yeah. Well, you won't even have to. If as long as the drugs are designed right, right? Not quite. I'm glad you got that. Probably the most prevalent way, and I think the best way for us right now, because we don't have the kind of designer drug ability, is the sort of biopsychosocial perspective, which is an interaction of nature and nurture, and you guys know how much I like that. That's my thing. So it's the idea of nature and nurture coming together. It's your environment and your biology coming together to create behavior, and sometimes the behavior itself is disordered. And as I said before, schizophrenia and depression are universal. It doesn't matter, and the rates are pretty much the same in every culture that's been studied. Whereas, I mentioned the idea of an anxiety disorder, and it looks like, you know, bulimia and anorexia probably have something to do with anxiety, and so does this disorder, this Japanese thing whose name I can never remember, that involves being really embarrassed, and like super embarrassed always in social situations, which is something we just don't have here. Right? So, we can talk about there being a biology part of it, and there's also the sort of environmental part of it, and they're going to always come together. Right? I don't think, by the way, again, this precludes the idea that someday it'll all be just treated organically, but still seems to me that this right now is our most effective approach, and it's probably the most popular approach nowadays. Except with schizophrenia, look, some people are predisposed to it, some people probably aren't. You are, however, more likely to become schizophrenic if you're poor, if you live below the poverty line. Then again, what comes first? Right? It's harder to hold down a job when you hear voices, but it's also... And like, what? Which was the voices first, or you can't hold down a job? You know, who knows, right? So it's all coming together, though. So that's the most common approach, and it's probably, for the most part, the best stuff that we can think of today. Any questions about that? And I mean, I think we'll probably even still think that way when we have drugs for everybody. I still think we'll say, well, what were the stressors in your life that caused this, and what's your biology, and here, take two of those. Right, but I still think we'll realize that everything is always an interaction of the environment and your genetic material. It has to be. That's how biology works. Right. All right. So what we have to do is classify these things. If we're going to classify disorders, we have to know a few things, and one of them is the overall characteristics of a disorder. Now, think about this for almost anything. If you watch House, who doesn't watch House? What's wrong with you? Start watching it. Make time for House. Monday nights at 8 on Fox. So I wish I should get money for that, shouldn't I? I have like 800,000 downloads of my lectures. Shouldn't I get money from Fox just for that? Just for saying that? I should. I start doing ads in the middle of the class. Now we're going to take a break with a word from Coke. Think about when you watch House and they're diagnosing people. Right? They list the symptoms, and then they get their various ideas of what it might be. And then it goes on and on and on, and House is really mean to some people, and then eventually he's right about everything, and then he's sitting there eating a hamburger, and it occurs to him, and he cures the guy. You've seen the show. I still love it, even though it's totally formulaic. But that's what they do, isn't it? If you go into the doctor's office, right now, you went and got looked at for something, you said, you know, I got... Some said, the doc's going to say, well, what do you have? Oh, I feel, I got this symptom and this symptom. They'll do a little examination and they'll say, do they usually do lab tests? No. They typically say, oh, all those things, I know what that is. You got red spots all over you that are kind of raised up and you're itchy. And you've got a fever. You've got the chicken pox. They don't then take a swab and see that you have chicken pox. They say, look, that's the chicken pox. And they just treat you. Right? Because they're pretty damn sure. So, in fact, that's how they diagnose physical disorders, too. Now, sometimes you might want to do a test to say, okay, is this... Maybe there's two sets of... And this always happens on House, right? There's two possible things it could be, or three, or seven, and they do some tests and narrow it down. But there are sometimes, like I said, if you've got chicken pox, you've got chicken pox, or the mumps. Another one of my favorites. I had the mumps when I was a kid because it was before there was the MMR vaccine when I was young. So everybody got the mumps. And my face was about this big. I woke up one morning. I looked at the mirror and my it was like this big. And I thought, either I've put on a great deal of weight or I have the mumps. Didn't have to go to the doctor. My mom did the diagnosis. You have the mumps. And she was right. So we do this a lot with even physical disorders. You got to realize that. So with the psychological disorders, what we have to do is get the overall characteristics of a disorder. And this is done in a couple of sort of manuals. One's the DSM. We're right now in the DSM-4R, actually. The DSM-5 will be out in 2013. DSM stands for Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association. It's a different APA than the American Psychological Association. So, what the DSM-4 has, R for revised, and soon the DSM-5 when it comes out, is it'll have things as disorders, and it'll say what the characteristics are. So for depression, it'll list a series of things, and it'll say how long you have had to have them, and it'll say for more than X number of weeks. Like, think about depression. When my dad died, I probably looked like I was depressed. But it was, again, remember, think of this, justifiable. In fact, if I wasn't upset that my father died, there'd be something wrong with me. Right? Even if he was a jerk, and he's not, he's awesome. That rocked. Literally. He could really play. It was good. He collected Gretsch guitars, which he eventually sold to Randy Bachman. That's cool. But I was pretty bummed out when my father died. I looked like a depressed person. Now, I didn't come into work because I kind of had to because I had classes to teach and what am I going to do? But I was down. I was a little weepy. Yeah. Did it last for 6 months? No. Because for most people, after a few weeks, it's like, well, life moves on. You've got to move on. Now, a lot of times, depression, for example, might come from that. So think about that biopsychosocial thing. If that happened and to this day I was still feeling like that, that's disordered. Right? So what the DSM does is it lists characteristics, symptoms. They're symptoms. And again, think about it the same way you think about House when they list, you know, he's got blood in his urine and this is shutting down and he's got this problem with this. Maybe it's, they always say maybe it's lupus and it's never lupus. You should notice that on House. It really doesn't please everyone. People get really pissed off about the DSM. Now, historically, it's had some things in it that I don't think we would call disorders today. Being gay was in it until 1972. Again, think about it culturally. You might, now, I'm not trying to offend anybody. Maybe you would say it is disordered then. I don't think, though, I mean, even in 1972, which is well before sort of general acceptance of homosexuality, the American Psychiatric Association said, wait a second, this isn't right, man. That's not a disorder. That's just a part of being a human. Some people are gay. Right? So historically, it hasn't pleased everyone. But even to this day, there's a big debate right now. Should Asperger's syndrome be removed and just become now... have the what we call diagnosis of Asperger's, will it now just become part of the autism spectrum? Which, it is part of the autism spectrum of disorders, but it's got its own separate section, the DSM. Maybe it'll go away. Right? So there's debate about this among professionals.
Do they just want to reduce clutter?
It's probably partially that. It's also, I think, a lot of it is that they sort of realize that, well, this is the notion. I'm not saying what I don't know what side of it I support, to be honest with you. Is it really sensible to think of it as a separate disorder? Because autism is a spectrum anyway. There are people that are so severe and also severely retarded, mentally retarded, and they, you know, are in pretty rough shape. To people like my little boy, who's clearly autistic, but you could, if he was here, well, he'd be running around and yelling, I want my mummy, probably, because he's going through that phase right now. But beyond that, he'd seem pretty normal until he walked up to you and started asking you what kind of car you drove. Right? But then you got people with Asperger's, and I've had a student that had Asperger's a few years back here, and he's, again, pretty high-functioning. Well, clearly, he's in graduate school. Bright guy. But is he the same, and this is the debate, is he the same as a guy who has no language whatsoever and an IQ of 60? Well, he's not the same, but maybe it's the same spectrum, right? It's like a continuum. So it's really hard to say why they're doing it, but I think that's the idea, is to basically say, look, it's all one big disorder. There's many colors of autism, like Jimmy would say, right? It's all a rich tapestry. So it might just be that. Now, it doesn't please everyone because someone who has Asperger's, for example, may not get... Maybe somebody who has Asperger's and self-identifies and has been diagnosed. A lot of people sort of self-diagnose, I have Asperger's. No, you're just awkward. There's a difference. But if you've actually been diagnosed, you've got a real disorder. For example, at the university, you could then ask for extra time to write a test, let's say, conceivably. On the other hand, most kids in school, like elementary school, high school, they don't get an educational assistant if they have Asperger's because they're intellectually fine. Their social skills aren't good. That's the big deal there. And it's not just not good, they're non-existent. They have to learn them. Things that we do automatically, things that we learn automatically, we're just built that way. They don't have that. What they've got is you have to teach them things. You have to say, when someone on the, is talking to you on the phone and goes, okay, that means they want you to hang up the phone. Right? Those little subtle cues that we all know, they don't know those cues. They have to learn them, right? Now, but if they're intellectually fine, they're not going to get support in like an elementary school, which my son does get. He has a full-time educational assistant with him who is amazing. Now, what if we change that? So maybe the Asperger people, maybe, for example, this is the debate. Do they want to be called autistic? On one level, no. I'm not like the guy that can't speak and has an IQ of 60. On the other hand, what if they had educational assistance? Now they're diagnosed with autism. Now they're going to get help in elementary school and high school. Ah, so there's two sides of this, right? So there's a political part of this besides the sort of scientific part of it. And you got to kind of pull the two apart. Right now, it looks like they want to take Asperger's out as a separate diagnosis. But that's just a leaked version, and they're just talking about it, and it doesn't come out until 2013. So it doesn't please everybody.
And it matters because the world will be destroyed.
Yeah, that's right, because in 2012, the world ends anyway. It also doesn't talk at all about causation. It doesn't say what causes stuff. It says that is what schizophrenia looks like. Nowhere in it does it also say, which is caused by too many D2 receptors. It doesn't say that. It just says, this is what it looks like. It's, note the name, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It's used a lot. Another one that's used is the ICD-10, which is put out by the World Health Organization. I think that stands for Index of Communicable Diseases. That's probably, but it doesn't always mean that. That can't be right. Because you can't catch autism. You can't catch depression. Anyway, it's the ICD-10. That's used in a lot of other countries. North America, we use the DSM. They're very, very similar. ICD, though, has no thoughts of taking Asperger's out. They're like, no, it's separate. And it's done by the UN, by the World Health Organization. And we can broadly, and I think I talked about, oh, I did that was in my drugs class. We can very broadly talk about neurotic versus psychotic disorders. Let's talk about psychotic ones first. Psychotic disorder means you're not what's called reality testing. You don't realize the way the world works. That kind of thing. Schizophrenia is a perfect example. We all have the little internal monologue, don't we? Right? You think to yourself, and you may even hear your own voice talking to you. Right? You're thinking about, what am I going to do today? And you're thinking, you don't think that's a separate guy who's talking to you and ordering you to wear a tinfoil hat. Right? Because you know that's just you. And you also don't think that you've had a chip implanted in your arm, do you? I hope. Because if you do, that's a pretty good symptom right there, actually. You seen A Beautiful Mind? You seen that movie? It's a great movie. Of course, I'm going to spoil it for you. It is a 10-year-old movie, so too bad. There's the part where, first of all, it's all visual hallucinations in that movie, and they almost always just have auditory ones, schizophrenic people. The other thing is that as soon as he had the chip implanted in his arm, I knew that he had schizophrenia. Because that's a very common thing that people say. And I was watching a movie with my wife, and I used to always wreck movies for her because I'm pretty good at figuring out what's going to happen. And I'd just yell things out, and then we'd have to turn the channel. So I took a piece of paper, and I wrote on it, paranoid schizophrenia, and folded it up. And she said, what'd you do? I said, oh, I've just figured out the movie, but I don't want to tell you. And then I pulled it out and said, hey, I'm smart. I'm an idiot who wrecks movies. 40 seconds into Sixth Sense. Oh, he sees dead people. Great. So That's not reality. Those things aren't actually happening. The voices aren't really there. A, quote, neurotic disorder, which, and we don't usually say that too much anymore, but it's, you actually are reality testing. You even realize that it's a problem what you have. A schizophrenic doesn't think it's a problem. They think they've been specially chosen to be a God or whomever. Very often they're Jesus. Now, in Western society, very often people are Jesus or Napoleon, people like that. Or actors. Apparently there's a guy, there's a case of, I can't say a whole lot more about this, but he thinks he's George Clooney. And apparently he's clearly not George Clooney. But he thinks he's George Clooney. Whereas if you've got, like, I don't know, anxiety, public speaking, you know that's a problem. You're still based in reality. If you've got a problem with, I don't know, even if it's something like, you think to yourself, you know, I really have trouble talking to people that I've just met. I get kind of shy, and it's kind of debilitating, and it's a little weird. Oh, you're actually just listing all the things that make it a disorder, but you know it's one. You're reality testing, right? So when you're reality testing still, but it's still disordered, we call that neurotic. When you're not reality testing anymore, it's psychotic. Questions about that? Now, sometimes a gray area, like depression, sometimes when you talk to a depressed person, they aren't reality testing, really. They can still have a conversation with them, though, and there's not the voices in the head. But when you say to a depressed person, why don't you get up? And they say, what's the use? Everybody hates me and everything just is going to fall apart anyway. That's not really reality, right? So it's kind of a gray area there. The DSM itself has many, many categories. There's five different, what are they called, axes. Yeah, please.
I heard a rumor, I don't know if it's true, that they're going to put a video game addiction in there.
Yeah, I've heard that as well, that they're going to look at that as any other kind of addictive behavior. Yeah. Yeah. That wouldn't surprise me. It can be all those things we talked about. It can be maladaptive. It can be unjustified. You get all that stuff in there. You know, and it can really do harm to somebody. And let's say you got a family. It can do harm to your family if instead of going to work, you're playing Modern Warfare 2. You know? I just want to get 10th prestige.
Wouldn't all addictions pretty much, if they're thinking of taking out aspirin, shouldn't they just condense all addictions into one addiction?
Well, and that's, there's talk of that. Though there's two schools of thought here. One of them is there's substance abuse, and the other one is that it's not. There's some things that aren't. Right? Things that either directly affect your brain chemistry, heroin, things that don't directly affect it, but in a roundabout way, in fact, actually work almost exactly the same way.
Feel good, no matter what,
and they make you feel good. Yeah, exactly. But when you do it to the exclusion of everything else.
The so-called addictive personality.
Yeah, there's no such thing as an addictive personality, though. That's pretty clear.
Are there people who are predisposed to addiction?
That's probably true, yeah. Looks like there's a genetic basis to it, yeah. Properly used, the DSM is valid and reliable. We talked about that when we talked about measurement, right? It's valid, meaning it predicts what it's supposed to. Two people, and it's reliable in that if I use it and you use it and we both know how to use it, we'll both get the same diagnosis. Some people say it's just labeling. All you're doing is labeling people, man. And labels disable. So you can see what I think of that notion. Now, here's an experiment. 1973, Rosenhan. This is a kind of a neat experiment. It's an experiment called On Being Sane in Insane Places. Wow, great title. I think I talked about this earlier in the course, right? In 2106. So what happens is he gets a bunch of people, he calls them pseudo-patients, and they check themselves into a psychiatric institution. There's nothing wrong with them, by the way. But they report having the following symptoms. They're hearing voices, and the voices are saying empty, hollow, and thud. Ooh. Well, and of course they get admitted to the psychiatric facility. Now, they take notes, and they don't take their medication. And believe me, if you've ever, mostly probably haven't taken any psychotic medication, but if you know anybody who has, they're really, the hardest part about keeping schizophrenics on their medication is it's no fun. It's not a good time. It takes away the joy in your life. The voices go away, though. So they don't take the medication. They take notes. And what happens? Then you got to find out how long until they get released. Average 19 days. Longest was, I think, 53 days. And the only people that figured out they were not really disordered were other patients. There's a great line in the paper where one of the pseudo patients reported that someone, basically another patient, came up to him and said, "You're not crazy, are you? You're like a reporter or something." Right? So the thing is, though, what are the psychiatrists, psychologists, MD, very other kinds of MDs, and nurses, what are they going to think? When you show up and report hearing voices, that's an indication of a disorder. If I walked into the hospital today, and it's a great, you know, and I walked in, I said, I my left arm is numb and I have chest pains. They're not going to go, "Faker." Right? They're going to take me and they're going to do the whole thing with the heart attack thing, because that's a heart attack. Yeah, they'll let me go in a couple days when they find out, and then they're going to ask, "What in the hell's your problem with pretending to have a heart attack?" "Well, really, my knee hurt, but I had to get in to see a doctor quickly." I've thought about doing that before, you know, like when something's a little sore. Just go, I'm going to go, "Oh, God, I think I'm having a heart attack." You get in, "Oh, yeah, actually, I got an earache, but I had to see a doctor, so could you check that out?" Please don't do that. Our medical system is enough. There's enough people that are having, you know, problems. But what are they supposed to think? There's a great line in a paper criticizing this. The guy said, you know, if I went and drank a quart of blood and then showed up at the hospital and I puked up blood, what are they going to say? "There's something wrong with you." Right? You're throwing up blood. "I think you probably have maybe an ulcer, you know, or whatever." Okay. So I don't know if it's nearly as bad as Rosenhan thought it was. More and more people, really, the nice thing is, seem to understand that psychological disorders are a lot more like sickness than they are like, you know, weaknesses in your character, which is good. And the nice thing is, it's people, the younger people are, the more likely they are to see it as just like, well, it's something maybe you'll get over with some treatment. Right? And that's a good thing. Because a lot of these things are treatable and people get better. Used to be, I bet if it was 30 years ago and I asked people, and I'm not going to ask you this because it's a personal question, but in my drugs class, my neuropharmacology class, and we talk about antidepressants, people just freely admit in a class that they have, that they take some antidepressant. Nobody's ashamed of it, and they shouldn't be. There's something wrong with them and they're getting better. It's not like if you got the flu, you go, "Oh, no, I don't. I don't have the flu. I'm perfectly fine. No, this isn't Tamiflu I have on me. They're Rolaids. I have heartburn," you know. You don't get embarrassed by that. You shouldn't be embarrassed by something like, say, depression. And the nice thing is, data show consistently every year that more and more people are starting to view these disorders as just basically the same as we view diabetes. You don't see somebody who has diabetes and go, "Ew, you're creepy." Right? "Stay away from me. I don't want to catch it." Questions about that? I'm going to pack it in today for today because Natasha's back to perhaps give some of you a survey about, for some thesis project-y thing she's doing, which is a good thing, thesis project-y things. Remember, honors thesis conference in here a week from Friday. Sorry to scare you like that. A week from Friday. If you're a psych major or you're interested in some of the experiments you were in, please show up and find out what happened in the data that was collected on you. Take it away. I wish you'd look my way.
will someday.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons copyright, share alike 2.5 Canada. Feel free to redistribute the information as you see fit, but please don't make any money out of it. And if you do, you got to tell me because I'm reserving that right. Giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want, okay? Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.brodbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at algomau.ca. My website is people.auc.ca/broadbeck/blog. Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from GarageBand.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.